Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Finals Countdown series, brought to you by MedTalks. Today's talk is part of the ophthalmology series, and we'll be looking at diabetic retinopathy. As always, please remember to share these episodes with your peers and check out all of our other episodes on podcast platforms such as Apple and Spotify. Diabetes is a systemic condition characterized by high blood glucose levels secondary to the body's inability to produce insulin, or a resistance of the body to any insulin that is produced. Diabetes can cause a number of ophthalmic conditions, which can be grouped under the umbrella term diabetic eye disease. Of these, diabetic retinopathy is the most prevalent condition, and it is the most common cause of blindness in the working age population of the United Kingdom. Diabetic retinopathy occurs when consistently raised blood glucose levels damage the microvasculature supplying the retina of the eye. This leads to a progressive loss of vision in patients. As diabetic retinopathy progresses and the microvasculature becomes severely damaged, endothelial cells release mediators such as vascular endothelial growth factor, or VEGF. VEGF promotes the formation of new blood vessels. However, these new blood vessels are very poorly formed and they can easily bleed. And if these vessels grow into the vitreous humor, it can lead to further complications, such as a vitreous hemorrhage or tractional retinal detachment. The majority of patients with type 1 diabetes will have some degree of retinopathy in the first 20 years of their diagnosis, and most patients with type 2 diabetes will have some changes at the time of their diagnosis. So what are the risk factors associated with diabetic retinopathy? The longer a patient has had a diagnosis of diabetes, the more at risk they are of retinopathy changes. Similarly, uncontrolled hypertension is also thought to bring an increased risk. Pregnancy can accelerate the progression of diabetic retinopathy, so it's very important to ensure that all pregnant women who are known to have gestational or pre-gestational diabetes undergo regular antenatal screening of diabetic retinopathy. Hyperlipidemia and hypercholesterolemia are also associated with an increased risk. So let's take a look at how a patient may present with diabetic retinopathy. In fact, many patients will be asymptomatic, even if they have proliferative disease. Early disease is commonly picked up incidentally at routine eye appointments in the community. However, some early symptoms that patients can complain of include floaters, blurred vision, especially if the macula is affected, a gradually decreasing visual acuity, and even a loss of vision, especially in the case of a large vitreous hemorrhage. Diabetic retinopathy is classified according to how severe the disease is. And these stages are defined by the signs that are seen at the back of the eye on slit lamp or fundoscopy examination. The three classes are non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy, proliferative diabetic retinopathy, and diabetic macular edema. So let's have a look at non-proliferative diabetic retinopathy first. This can be further divided into background retinopathy and pre-proliferative retinopathy. In background retinopathy, there will be the presence of at least one microaneurysm. A microaneurysm is one of the earliest changes that can occur to damaged vessels. In pre-proliferative retinopathy, you may see a number of signs, including microaneurysms, dot and blot hemorrhages, and hard exudates. There may also be signs of retinal ischemia in the form of cotton wool spots, venous beading, and intraretinal microvascular abnormalities. Severe preproliferative diabetic retinopathy can be defined using the 4-2-1 classification. And these are blot hemorrhages in 4 quadrants, or venous beading in 2 quadrants, or an IRMA, or the intraretinal microvascular abnormalities, in 1 quadrant. Proliferative diabetic retinopathy occurs when new vessels have formed at the back of the eye under the influence of VEGF. Proliferative diabetic retinopathy can be further categorized as new vessels on disc, or NVD, versus new vessels elsewhere, or NVE. The third stage is diabetic macular edema, or DMO, and this is where there are edematous changes in and around the macula. The primary complaint patients will present with DMO is blurred central vision, which is particularly noticeable when reading or difficulty in recognizing faces. This is because the macula is responsible for central vision of the eye. So what do you need to do when investigating a patient with diabetic retinopathy? After taking your history, you want to clinically examine the patient with a slit lamp to look at any of the changes at the back of the eye that we have just talked about. You could also request a blood HbA1c level, which will allow you to see how well or poorly your patient is controlling their diabetes. Imaging can also be used to further assess the severity of diabetic retinopathy. Optical coherence tomography, or OCT, allows you to view the retina in the cross-sectional axis, and this allows for the level of edema and retinal thickness to be measured, which is particularly useful in suspected cases of DMO. Fluorescein angiography is when dye is used to visualize the microvasculature at the back of the eye. And it really helps to show the subtle signs of diabetic retinopathy, such as microaneurysms, more clearly than what you would see on slit lamp examination alone. So now let's talk a bit about the management of patients with diabetic retinopathy. So we can be conservative in the early stages of the disease by ensuring that the patient attempts to minimize the risk factors that we had mentioned earlier, such as uncontrolled hypertension. This will also include making lifestyle changes to reduce their underlying diabetes. Medical treatment similarly focuses on ensuring good glycemic and blood pressure control. If we can control the underlying diabetes, then we can also help to slow down the progression of diabetic retinopathy. In patients who develop proliferative retinopathy, laser photocoagulation is the gold standard treatment. This technique essentially involves destroying retinal cells with small burns, which further helps to reduce the oxygen demand at the back of the eye. This in turn decreases the expression of VEGF and therefore stops and slows down the development of new blood vessels. Focal photocoagulation targets specific areas of the retina, whilst pan-retinal photocoagulation is used in more widespread disease. Intravitreal anti-VEGF is also becoming an increasingly common treatment option in the management of proliferative disease. Examples of anti-VEGF treatments are aflibercept, which the brand name is Eylea, and ranibizumab, which is Lucentis. Remember that anti-VEGF treatment is contraindicated in patients who have suffered from a stroke or myocardial infarction within the last 3 months. Complications of diabetic retinopathy include neovascular glaucoma, and this is where new vessels grow within the trabecular meshwork and iris, causing an obstruction to aqueous humor outflow. This subsequently causes an increase in the intraocular pressure and therefore can lead to an acute closed-angle glaucoma. As mentioned earlier, retinal detachment can also occur in proliferative disease, and this is because new blood vessels are able to grow into the vitreous humor and then pull on the retina, causing a tractional retinal detachment. One final point is that it's helpful to remember and learn the UK screening program for diabetic retinopathy. The NHS provides an annual eye screening program to all patients over the age of 12 who are living with diabetes. So that brings us to the end of this episode. We've had a look at diabetic retinopathy, its risk factors, its presenting symptoms and signs, how it is classified, what investigations we can use, and the management involved. So thank you all for listening. We hope you found it useful. As always, please give us your feedback via the Apple Podcasts channel. And if you want to send us a message, you can do so on Instagram. Please remember to share this with your friends and peers. And remember that we have plenty of more episodes coming up, so stay tuned for those too. Thank you very much.